When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin starts bob, bob, bobbing along.
This hour of Martha Norwalk's Animal World is brought to you by Wysong, the thinking person's pet food.
Martha Norwalk, and welcome you to the first hour of this week's edition of Animal World. We're here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Hey, you can tune us in on the radio dial. You can tune us in on the internet via streaming audio. That means you can share us with your family and friends around the country, around the world, if they've got internet access. Now, the best way to pick up the stream is go to the Animal World website. That would be www.marthanorwalk.com. Click on the Listen Live icon in the upper right-hand corner of the homepage. That will click you through to the 1150 KKNW website. Click on Listen Live again, and that will bring up the instructions that you need to stream the show. It's actually, we've got a sunny day happening out here in the Pacific Northwest, and some blue sky covered with some really high clouds. You can see Seattle. Can't see the mountains real well, but they're there. But I can see across the table from me, he's kind of a mountain kind of guy. At least he has a North Face jacket on. That would be Animal World's production engineer, Gary Hill, is here. Morning, Gary.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. I sound strange in the headset. But everything is working okay?
Yeah.
It doesn't sound normal. And I'm not sure why. But
I don't know what to tell you.
It sounds to me like things aren't working normally, but
yeah, everything's good.
Well, no, that's not true.
Yeah.
The phones are not right. Our computers are not working and all of that.
Computer's working. It's just the phone.
Well, but my screen does not.
Well, it's the same thing.
Well, to me, that's the computer. Listen, is that a computer? That's like a computer screen in front of me, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not working. But it's really related to the phones.
Yes.
But so that means we can't take phone calls?
No. The phone's working.
Phone's
just
working.
Our normal system isn't working.
Okay.
We're back. We're with our old system now.
So we're even worse than we were last week.
Because
last week the phone, my screen was working, but yours and Sandy's weren't. Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose.
Now they're all down.
Yeah.
So someone was working really hard this last week.
Well, it went
here at the station.
That's
huh?
when it went down. Yeah, they had a lot of. They were working.
They were working real hard, and they just messed it up worse, huh?
No, there were big problems with it. So.
I see.
And it takes, a lot of times you have to order a part, and it takes a while again, so.
Really? That happens in radio, too,
yeah.
Huh? Okay. All right.
Fortunately, we have something up, though. Something. Anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So it's just, we just don't know. Well, I'll be in the dark if you call. Which is sometimes I'm there anyway. Yeah. And speaking of being in the dark, quiet as a mouse in the other room, that would be Animal World's co-producer and call screener, Sandy Gaston, is here. Morning, Sandy.
Good morning. That's because I'm just sitting here thinking.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Don't forget, that's what I'm doing today. I'm sitting and thinking all day and listening.
That's okay. Yeah, y'all don't know, but that takes a little explanation. But first of all, I have to let you know that our favorite all-time guests are in the studio. Helen and Bill Thayer are here, adventure travelers. Good morning, Helen.
Good morning.
Y'all have to just trust that Bill is here, because those of you that are regulars, you know he doesn't speak. Oh, there he is in the background.
He said something.
he's reading the paper in the background. He's there when you need him, right, Helen?
Always, always.
Yeah.
Very dependable.
And he's very much a part of the trips and everything, and you guys are a real team. And
he's at least a 50% part.
Yeah. It's just he just doesn't do radio.
No. Well, I'm the speaker, and he's a quiet, silent, thoughtful person. Doesn't pay to have two talkers in the one family.
Well, that's true. But yeah, it kind of works out best if you have
opposites.
Got to
have the thinker, and you got to have the speaker.
I see. And of course, you are, for any of us, any of the listeners that don't know, you have just returned from a trip to Africa.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And you've been on your first round. You're preparing to go back for the second round two of Africa and living with the natives and so forth. And
that's right, yeah.
Anyway, we've snagged you while you're back in town briefly to fill us in on your adventures and what you've learned and all that good stuff. Anyway, you brought a pile of photographs that are phenomenal. And somehow looking at the photographs, Sandy.
Yes.
There's a picture. Now, the reason that you're sitting there thinking, I'm trying to explain this to everybody in Radio Land so they know what's up with you in there and why you won't be speaking to them on the phone today, apparently, because you've laid down the law that she's going to sit in there and think. Now, that's why, because you're pretending to be, what's it? Well, we have this phenomenal photo.
I'm not pretending. I have morphed into
She's morphed now. Yeah. Okay, because we have a photograph here of Helen that you took in Africa, and it looks like a family of natives.
Well, our purpose was to live with the Maasai tribe,
uh-huh.
A very remote area, way off the tourist beaten path.
So is this a photograph of
So this particular photograph, we just lined this one family up, and this one man had 12 wives. And
it's common
for the men to have many, many wives. And when they get when a man gets to be about 35 years old, he's gone through all the rituals of becoming an adult, then he basically sits and thinks.
I see. So
makes all the decisions.
And you called him a Messiah.
A Messiah, yes.
Messiah. All right. So that's where Sandy got this, folks. She heard that. And how she went from in Africa and you're a man and after you're 35, you just get to sit around and think. To somehow she feels like she deserves to just sit around and think. But how that... So I'm not quite sure. So first she said she's pretending, but
because
now...
Because I'm over 35.
Well, so am I. But if we both sit here and think all morning, we're in big trouble.
But see, I said it first.
Oh,
I said it first. So.
Gary, are you over 35?
No.
Oh, good.
No,
thank goodness.
So I can't think.
He can't think.
He's a Messiah. He has to go out and
have
the cattle.
Well, he only has one wife. Do you have to have 20 wives, Sandy? You don't have 20 wives.
I could have them. I could use a couple mud huts. And
yeah, but the women have to build the mud huts.
Right. That's what I mean. I would just sit and think and watch them.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I'm glad I live in Washington.
I suppose.
I'd not be good at building mud huts, I'll tell you that.
The women work hard. They build the huts, they bring the water, they haul the water from miles away.
Well, anyway, folks, wait till you hear all the stories that Helen has to tell, and we'll talk about all these photographs and, of course, what's up next. So, anyway, that's what we're doing today. It's a Helen and Bill Thayer Sunday here on Animal World, and we're excited to get into that discussion. But first, we've got some follow-up. I've got a follow-up email from last week, some follow-up, and then animals in the news. And wouldn't you know, I mean, spirit is always wonderful, Helen, when I have guests about what shows up in the news. And there's actually two things that from Africa about animals in the news this week that I want to talk to you about. So that'll be cool. All right, so let's see. First, and things are as usual for the rest of the show. We have about 10:50 current events, a bunch of stuff on the current events, and we will have a new Pet of the Week from King County Animal Care and Control this week. They had some technical difficulties and so forth, and so we didn't have a Pet of the Week last week. Although all of our Pets of the Week have been adopted. Woohoo! So we will start with a new one today. And that'll be about a little after 10:50 after current events. And then 11 o'clock, Winter Tip will run. The rest of the time, we're going to be talking to Alan and Bill. Well, sort of. You know, I mean, Bill's here, but never mind. All right, let's see. Follow-up from last week, got a nice email. Hi, Martha. I really enjoy listening to your show on Sundays and reading your column in the New Spirit Journal. On today's show, I heard about the slaughter of elk near Concrete and was saddened by the news. And this was, Helen, we talked about last week, the local story in Concrete where they had opened bow hunting season to try to get the elk out of the farmland, and a big herd of elk came down into somebody's pasture, and the neighbors called, and all these bow hunters came out, and they had this huge herd of elk trapped in this pasture, and they just started firing arrows in there, and it was just a massacre, and it was, I think they killed seven, but a bunch were hit and got away, and it was really disgusting. And Department of Fish and Wildlife was there, but since they weren't breaking any laws, they didn't stop them, but now they canceled the bow hunting season.
What about the injured animals that ran away?
Well, that was an oh well, and a hindsight, gee, guess this was not a real good idea. But anyway, so we reported on that last week. And this is she says, I heard about, on today's show, this is last Sunday, I heard about the elk slaughter near Concrete and was saddened by the news. Hunting is a controversial subject, and I imagine you might receive other emails on this. I'm not a fan of hunting. I wanted to say that the actions of the people described were certainly not hunting. My son-in-law is a bow hunter and is very careful not to take a shot unless he is confident he has a clear shot with a very good chance of a humane kill. Unfortunately, some people will be irresponsible or immoral in their behavior in many activities. Thank you for bringing forth all your great information, opinions, and news, good and bad. Mm-hmm. Yours, Lynn. So, thank you, Lynn, for that. And I found that at least nice to know that there are bow hunters out there with conscience that are humane about what they do. It's just this was in last week. This was described as a huge burst of testosterone, you know, out there, which is really not true. And very sad. But hopefully it won't happen again. But it makes you think. All right, let's see. Follow-up article. Sandy.
Yeah.
Did you hear all over the news this week? Closing county animal shelter? Not so fast.
Yeah, I heard that.
And so if you want to read all the details that came out this week, this is a search Seattle Times, and this was in Tuesday's paper, but basically what's happening now is they had a plan in place that King County Animal Care and Control, if you've been listening to this show, you know that they were scheduled to close the end of this month, and now that's been postponed indefinitely, and the new King County executive, Dow Constantine, is going to ask the council to delay the timing because they can't make it work. And the plan was to take the county out of the animal control services, let nonprofit animal rescues and humane shelters around the area take care of the animals instead. And initially, the Humane Society said, no, we can't handle it. And then into the process, all of a sudden they're saying, oh, we can't handle it, bring them on, we'll do it. That was, of course, when there was a couple of $1 million on the line that King County said they were going to pay, but then that came off the table, and now we're back to the Humane Society and the other shelter saying there's no way we can handle it. And, hey, Sandy?
Yeah?
Can I say, I told you so?
Yeah, you can.
Okay, I mean, is that fair?
It's very fair.
Have you been listening?
I just can't believe.
I told you so.
When they started all this.
Why didn't they just ask me in the first place? anyway, so I told you so. Of course it's not going to work. I mean, I don't think I've even mentioned this on the air before, but I did a lot of work at the Humane Society here in Factoria, 20 years ago.
Right.
And when I was co-owner of Canine College, Lori and I did our doggy day camp out of the Humane Society. That was one of the facilities we worked out of. So I was there a lot and in and out of the facilities. And I have to tell you, 20 years ago, the place was old and run down. And from what I can tell, because I've been in there, in and out of there, over the years, and not a lot has changed.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you.
It was outdated and it was not good 20 years ago. It's even worse now. Now, they keep it clean and all of that, but it's like there's been no remodel and upgrading and updating and all that kind of stuff. And to put 10,000 more animals a year through there, 10,000 to 12,000 more, that ain't happening.
No, the animals are going to suffer, and
of course,
the humans.
Yeah.
So are the humans that. Because the people that work there are not making a ton of money. If they're making any, a lot of them are volunteers.
There's a huge turnover. Huge turnover.
And, it just has to break their hearts to see what happens. And, not be able to give the amount of care that they would like to each animal. I mean, it was just crazy to even think they could do that.
Yeah, truly so. So anyway, from the beginning, I said, fix what we got. This new stuff isn't going to work. But we'll see. Maybe they'll pull it together eventually. But, you know, 10 to 12,000 animals a year, that's a lot of animals to deal with. Mm. Yeah, so anyway, we'll see what happens. We'll be talking to Nancy about Pet of the Week from King County Animal Care Control next hour. But so that's going on. All right, that takes care of the follow-up. Let's take care of our advertisers and sponsors so we stay on time today, and then we will come back and finish up with the rest of the news. We'll start off with the African animals in the news, since Helen is sitting right here, and then we will get into our adventure travelers.
Woo-hoo.
Africa, I can't wait to hear about it. The photographs are phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. Can't wait till there's a slideshow on this one. Woo-hoo. All right, stay with us. Animal World continues right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Hey, did you know that even if you feed the highest quality all-natural foods, even if you home-cook for your animal friends, the ingredients in that food is exposed to heat, light, and oxygen, and that begins to destroy a lot of the important stuff. Well, that's why Designing Health created The Missing Link. Now, they start with human-grade, all-whole-natural raw food sources. They've figured out a way to protect it from heat, light, and oxygen. It comes to us in a powdered form in a resealable gold foil pouch. You keep it in the refrigerator once you've opened it. Mix up your animal friend's food. Put in some Missing Link, add a little cool water to mix it up, and voila, you've added what's missing, like the balanced omega-3 and 6 oils, the enzymes in the raw ingredients, and the fiber. Now, the Missing Link eliminates excessive shedding problems in dogs, eliminates hairball problems in cats. There is a Missing Link formula for dogs, one for cats. There's a vegetarian formula you can feed to both your dogs and cats and other critters like house rabbits, hamsters, guinea pigs, the like. There's a bird formula and a horse formula, and Missing Link Plus with glucosamine for connective tissue and joint support in a dog and horse formula. And there's also a veterinary formula. It's a little more powerful. You have to get from the vet. At any rate, ask for the Missing Link wherever you shop for premium pet supplies, or go directly to Designing Health. You can give them a call at 1-800-774-7387. That's 1-800-774-7387. Or visit them online, www.designinghealth.com.
Holocaust specialist and metaphysical mother Robin Alexis for your free on-air readings at her new time on Wednesdays at noon. Psychic medium Robin Alexis helps countless people to live fuller and more conscious lives on Mystic Radio with Robin Alexis. Call Wednesdays at noon for your free on-air readings. Hear rebroadcasts of Mystic Radio on Thursdays at 8 p.m. and Sundays at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150. And check Robin's new Reiki Healing Energy Portal at robinalexis.com.
Massage is good for everyone, including your pets. Learn animal massage close to home at the Northwest School of Animal Massage. Teaching pet owners and horse owners since 2001, the Northwest School of Animal Massage offers flexible online and hands-on classes, transforming your life and the lives of your animals. To learn more about animal health and well-being, go to nwsam.com and check Pet Shop Talk. And for more information about animal massage classes or Reiki classes, go to nwsam.com or call 877-836-3703. That's 877-836-3703.
Don't forget, this is Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Hey, y'all, I'm Martha Norwalk. Hey, Gary. Sandy is the one that's sitting and thinking. So what's up with you?
No one would have ever known had you not said anything.
Oh, that you're just over there spaced out and don't turn on my microphone?
I thought you jumped the gun a little bit.
Oh.
You went a little quicker than normal, that's all.
Oh, I see. That's all, because I'm excited. Helen, Bill, you know.
I understand. I'm just saying you went a little quicker than normal.
Well.
I have the timing pretty much down. I don't have to look. But you jumped it a little bit.
Well, I'll let that one go.
Thank you.
Hey, you know, we didn't decide today whose fault everything was. I think it's
just San Diego,
must be yours.
That worked out really well.
That was last week. It was her fault last week.
I know, but I thought
it was my fault the week before,
really,
so I guess it's your turn.
Well.
So you're messing up the detail because everything's your fault today.
Okay.
All right.
I noticed the red light is a little hidden this week.
It is. I can't see it.
Yeah. Maybe I'll try and unearth it.
Yeah. Well, see, there's a red light that goes on, folks, that tells me the microphones are on. And you can't hear me. But, you know, the light doesn't come on, Gary, until you flip the switch. And this light, you did not flip the switch.
Well, I know.
Because I jumped the gun.
Yes.
The bumper music.
Do you need a referee?
And then once you start.
Well, usually we have Sandy, but she's just sitting there thinking.
I can see the referee if you like.
Just thinking.
And once you start, I have to wait till you complete your sentence because I don't want to join you in mid sentence. So I have to wait for you to stop and then restart.
Then I
start. So I can get you from the beginning.
I know, but I know the difference because it sounds different. When
I know, but
it's not on.
But the people out there wouldn't have known.
Well, because they don't hear anything. Never mind. All right.
This is getting way technical.
Yeah, okay. Helen and Bill Thayer are here. Adventure travelers are just fresh back from their first trip to Africa, getting ready for the second one. We will get into all of that as the show progresses. It is still time at this moment for Animals in the News. And let's see. We have got a couple of African things going on this week, and there's a story. Now, because let's see, I guess first we should talk about, before I talk about these two stories, where in Africa have you just been?
We went to Tanzania to live with the Maasai tribe in a very remote part of Tanzania, away off the tourist routes, so that we could really get an idea of their true lifestyle.
Okay, now if we imagine, you know, a map of Africa mm-hmm. in our mind, where is Tanzania?
Tanzania is one of the eastern coastal countries.
Okay, eastern side.
South of Somalia and a little south west of Kenya.
Okay.
And it has a long coast. It's on the east coast.
Okay, so like this first article or news report out of Africa is out of Nairobi, Kenya. Mm-hmm. So were you close to there?
Yes. Kenya was just, we were just very close to the Kenyan border. In fact, we went over the border into Kenya at one point with the Maasai.
Okay, because this is, I may have heard this story this week, but an elephant charged out of the brush as a U.S. family was hiking near Mount Kenya and trampled to death a mother and a one-year-old daughter she held. And it was four adults and the baby were on a guided tour just outside of Mount Kenya National Park. This was just last Monday. And apparently this isn't all that unusual. It says that somebody gets trampled about once a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that this elephant came out of the brush so quickly and everybody else ran, but apparently this mother with the young child she was carrying, either the child was too heavy and she couldn't run fast enough, or she was in shock or panicked and didn't get out of the way. So,
well, it was something that didn't have to happen, as most of these things.
Oh, okay. So yeah, enlighten us on this.
Apparently it was at a hotel right in smack in the middle of the tourist area,
mm-hmm.
and it was just a guide, an unarmed guide from the hotel. And what in the world, they were taking a family out walking in the bush away from the hotel, just an ordinary guide with no means of protection. That should never have happened. And an elephant, when we were with the Maasai, we walked from village to village. We walked around 400 miles.
So were you in danger of being trampled and
no,
all that?
No, because the Maasai, they know if an animal is dangerous and if not. They sort of are in tune with the thought pattern of these animals.
Oh, okay.
And you can tell by the way they are, but if an animal looks up and starts being interested, it's time for you to get out of there. And these people shouldn't, you know, these signs should have been seen. And you can't outrun a person unless you've really thought about it beforehand. You're not going to outrun a charging elephant.
The closest I've been, of course, has been on nature television, mm-hmm. you know, and seeing films, but mm-hmm. there certainly are plenty of people that go over there, and some of these reporters get too close to the elephants. And I remember there was something, I think it was on CNN or one kind of report, but they got too close to the elephants, yeah. and they were being charged, and they got out of there, you know, on the truck and out of there just with by the skin of their teeth.
Those
elephants are fast.
We've been within 6 feet. Just one day, we just stood watching this this female elephant. She had a baby close by, and she was just feeding, and she was contented, and we were just very quiet, and just very passive and quiet, as were the Maasai warriors who were with us, and they knew that this elephant was no danger. But then later on, as we were walking to another village with them, there was an elephant group, and they said, we have to go way around these. We don't want these animals to even see us. So it depends. So you have to be with the... In Africa, in most places, we've just set off from one side of the country, like the Gobi, one side of the country, and walk across 1,600 miles across the other, or the Sahara, 4,000 miles across.
Yeah, and you've
in Africa, you don't do
you
that
can't
because
do that. Oh.
You can be surrounded by hyenas or lions, and there could be an elephant group there that's not doesn't want you around. So you have to... we actually lived with the Maasai, so we walked from village to village with them. We didn't go out by ourselves, and we camped within their compound, their housing compound, their it's called a kraal, where they have their mud huts. We put our tent up alongside a mud hut, and so you have to use common sense, because you have a it's different. You have all these wild animals. The lions can surround your tent. And
okay, so this situation that
this
happened
was unnecessary.
Should not have happened.
No. And it wasn't the tourist's fault, because okay. They don't know.
Right, so people living that are listening that might be going to Africa, you know, for safari or whatever they go on, how would they know not to do something like this? I mean, how should this have been set up?
If there's a hotel, if they're at a hotel and there's a bush area around it, and some guide will take them out for a walk in the bush, and they're unarmed, don't go.
Don't go. Okay.
And you should really go only with people who are very experienced. The contact we have who sets things up for us in Africa, he's had 16 years of actual guiding experience, and he knows the animals, and he knows every living creature out there, and he knows what they're doing, and so he knows where to take us to, which Maasai tribes to go to. You have to go where people know what they're doing.
This other African report that I have in the news this week, I actually saw on, I think it was a CNN report. No, I think it was Nightline. Actually, it was a Nightline program this week. And they had a whole feature on Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really fascinating. And what they were talking about is how they'd handled the plight of wild animal. Excuse me. The plight of wild animals in Namibia, that there was so much poaching going on, the numbers were decreasing. And so they somehow put into place a program where the natives own the wildlife and then become responsible for them. And so this whole feature was talking about how this has totally shifted what's going on with wildlife in Namibia, that the natives are now very protective, and there is very little, if any, poaching going on, because they don't do that anymore, because they're hurting themselves if they do that. And they said that's the only place in Africa where the number of animals is going up rather than down. So now, is Namibia anywhere near where you were, and do you know anything about that?
It's one of the western countries.
Oh, okay, so it's on the other side of Africa.
That's right. Tanzania is doing a very good job. They call the tsetse fly the best ecologist in the world, because so many areas of Tanzania are affected by the tsetse fly, which kill cattle. So
now, I think we're all familiar with here a tsetse fly, because I've heard that before, but what is a tsetse fly?
It produces, it's larger than a house fly.
Larger, okay.
And a little bit larger, about the same color. Uh-huh. But its bite is absolutely vicious. But it takes thousands of bites for a human to get the sleeping sickness that this creature carries.
Tsetse flies cause sleeping sickness.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And but they kill the cattle quite easily, but they don't have any effect on wild animals. So Tanzania has turned about 30% of the country into national parks and reserves, because these areas are no good for the Maasai to run their cattle or anybody else to run their cattle.
Because of the tsetse flies.
So it's wide open for the wild animals, and they don't allow the Maasai to live in those areas.
Oh.
So about 30% of the country is these wonderful national parks, and it's against the law to walk across those parks. You have to be with a guide or, you know, as we were with Maasai.
Mm-hmm.
So very strict laws. But and Namibia, they have to have a program of interaction with the native people, and that really works, because if the natives have no income, then they're going to go in and kill the animals, the elephants for ivory, because right. there are still people buying ivory, and bushmeat is a big thing, where they'll go in and kill animals and then sell the meat for a high price.
Mm.
So if the natives understand that they tourists will bring in money for them, income for them, and in other ways, and they will protect it.
Yeah, makes a difference. All right, let's finish up the animals in the news here so we can talk more about all of this. And let's see. Sea lions back in the news today, or this week, and this is out of Grants Pass, Oregon. The title, the article here is, Where Did San Francisco Bay's Sea Lions Go? And they're saying to the Oregon coast. And hundreds of sea lions that abruptly blew out of San Francisco Bay's Pier 39 around Thanksgiving have apparently found a home 500 miles north on the Oregon coast. And we're talking thousands of California sea lions started showing up in December at Sea Lion Caves. That's apparently a popular tourist draw because of the stellar sea lions living in the caves. The California sea lions appear to have made the trip because of an abundance of anchovies at that site. And the numbers at Pier 39, that's in San Francisco, where these sea lions had been living, fell from a peak in October of 1,701 sea lions. Now, I'm wondering where they get that number, 1,701. Did someone really sit there and count every single sea lion? But anyway, 1,701 in October, and it was down by the end of November, there were only 20 left there. So apparently they all moved up to Oregon, but the consensus from the scientific community is that there's nothing really unusual going on here. It's the El Nino, and the ocean is warming a bit, and so what the sea lions eat are moving to cooler waters up north, and sea lions are just following the food. So it's kind of interesting. Oh, University of Washington in trouble again for their monkey research. And if you want all the details on this, what?
No.
Oh, you're just commenting out of the...
Yeah.
Okay. And if you want to pull up this article, Seattle Times from January 9th, that would be yesterday. The staff of the University of Washington Natural Primate Research Center allowed a monkey to starve to death this last year. And there's a whole article about the history. Apparently, the UW's been in trouble for a while. They had problems with primates, but they had done better, but this doesn't help them. I didn't realize, Sandy, I don't know if you realize this. Pardon me for interrupting your thinking.
Okay.
But the UW Primate Center's website says it's the largest of 8 federal centers across the country. Facilities in Seattle house about 700 animals, mostly macaques and baboons. And the university also operates primate breeding colonies in Louisiana and Texas with about 3,000 animals.
Yeah, I knew that.
Did you know that? I had no idea they had that many and were doing that.
Yeah.
All I have to say is, when are we going to stop this nonsense? When are this just has to stop.
I've written more letters.
Well, apparently...
Since I'm speaking and not thinking, I saw the sea lions. I've been to those caves.
Oh, the sea lion caves?
And I saw a piece on the sea lions. It looked like somebody took pepper and just dotted the ocean with it. There were so many. It
was the sea lions
incredible.
Being the pepper?
Yeah, the sea lions being the pepper. If you just took a gallon of pepper and spread it over a small area, that's what it looked like. It was amazing to see all the sea lions.
Wow.
And there's lots of food there for them, so it's a good thing.
Yeah. Apparently they like anchovies.
I like anchovies.
I don't like anchovies. They can have them. Or you can have them.
Thank you.
Okay, I suppose, do you all see the, because this was all over the news, the clash between the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society's speedboat and the Japanese whaling ship that rammed them? Did you all see that on the news this week? Are you back thinking?
Oh, no, I did not see that.
Well, no, this is off of Sydney, Australia. The story's out of Sydney. It was a clash off of Antarctica. And, you know, the Japanese, well, it says Japan kills about 1,200 whales a year during the December-February whaling season. And the Sea Shepherd, you know, sends ships to try to stop that. And of course, now it's been made a TV show, Whale Wars, on Animal Planet, so you can watch them, and so they're picking up steam. Now, Greenpeace is not liking what they're doing, and there's kind of a conflict between Greenpeace and the Sea Shepherd, because Greenpeace is trying to change the thinking in Japan to get them to stop this. And anyway, their hope is, of course, Sea Shepherd is trying to prevent as many of these kills as possible, and the Japanese contend that they are, of course, catching, you know, slaughtering these whales for research, which we all know is a bunch of hogwash, and it's just a loophole for them to continue whaling, right, Helen?
Mm-hmm.
And that needs to stop, too.
Yeah.
So I certainly understand why they're so passionate about that. But, I mean, how this can continue for so many years with Japan saying, oh, research, research. Sorry, I mean, there's nobody in their right mind thinks it's research. Hey, everybody knows what's going on. So why don't we put a stop to it?
Yeah, that's what I ask. Why don't they stop it?
Oh, yeah, why don't they stop it?
Why is it allowed to go on? It's the same with the monkey business at the university.
Yep,
it needs to stop.
Yeah. Yeah, all right, so we've said it here. All this needs to stop. Just cut it out, everybody. Oh, now, this is fast. This is the last article in the news before the good news. And Kabul, which is in Afghanistan, Kabul Zoo, a haven for humans. Now, have you and Bill ever been over to the Afghanistan, Pakistan area?
I walked through the northern part of Afghanistan on a mountain climbing expedition once, but have not been to Kabul.
Okay. And how long ago was that you were in Afghanistan?
It was in 1986 when they were fighting the Russians.
Ah. Amazing, you guys. Where have you been? And because this apparently, the zoo was built in 1967 with research facilities and tourist attractions and was part of a push by Afghanistan to emerge as a modern state. But decades of war have ravaged the zoo. And so there are very few animals left and so forth. But apparently, even the Kabul Zoo, even the empty cages are a draw because they're quiet. It says, off a busy street leading to the city's commercial center, the zoo is no longer the city's pride, but it does provide a refuge from the traffic, noise, and chaos of the Afghan capital. Parents bring children here to walk amid the tall trees and gaze at the animals, even the empty enclosures. Women in pale blue burqas stroll the grounds. So apparently the zoo is still there, and they've got a photograph here of some kind of a bear that's there. I just found that interesting that, you know, we kind of don't think of, I mean, Afghanistan is kind of just this place that we're at war in. And you think of it as the films that we see of it's pretty desolate, there's nothing going on, but, you know, they have busy cities and have a zoo just like we do.
Yeah, some of those zoos in those countries aren't very nice places.
No, no. So, anyway. All right, enough of that. What do you say we do the best good news about animals? Oh, maybe it'll bring back our sunshine. Wasn't it nice to have sunshine this week?
Mm.
Yesterday, the day before, really beautiful. Actually,
it was a perfect day.
I got to blow some leaves around. It was really nice. The first, I just pulled a photograph out of the Times this week. A Bengal tiger at the Woodland Park Zoo has a big yawn here. They call it time for catnap. It's a cute photograph if you want to see the inside of a tiger's mouth. Now, I've noticed in all the photographs, Helen, we got lots of photographs of lions really up close and a lot of other animals, but no tigers. So there's no tigers in Africa.
No, no, just they're lions. an Asian animal. Okay. There are leopards and cheetahs and lions in the main cats in Africa.
All right. The runner-up in the best good news about animals is that Happy New Year, we have a new orca. Did you see the photograph of J-Pod's newest baby orca, just a few days old? There's a photograph of her swimming alongside the mother in this week in Puget Sound. So
it's a nice photo.
It is. It's a lovely photo. Mm-hmm. Did you see the baby and mom?
Oh.
Very cool. Yep, and so we're celebrating the good news as long as it lasts. Of course, they don't officially count a baby orca as part of the group until they're a year old, because many of them don't survive. And this one says that the calf was spotted chugging alongside its mother in Puget Sound between Des Moines and the north end of Vashon Island last Sunday. And if it survives and gets officially counted, it would bring the population to 88, and which is good. But let's see, the baby's mother, though, was born in 1998, so apparently that's relatively young for a whale. And they say raising concern for the survival of both the mother and the baby, because apparently orcas don't usually come into their reproductive years until they're about 15. Hmm. So they're thinking, you know, something shifted this, because this orca is just, 11?
She's very young.
Yeah. Yeah. So it says births among the southern resident orcas are not unusual. Last year there were 5, but the youngsters almost die. So often die, so they aren't officially counted until they're a year old. But for right now, we can celebrate, because there's a new baby in the J-Pod. All right, and then the winner of the best good news about animals. Oh, you got to look at this. Look at this photograph. Is that the most beautiful coyote?
Oh, yeah. That's a beautiful fella.
Isn't that gorgeous? Mm-hmm. Look at this. Look at this coyote.
Oh.
And if you want to pull the photograph up in the story, it's out of last Sunday's Times. Coyote prompts howls and yawns in Magnolia. Now, I've picked this as the winner of the best good news this week because of what's not happening. Okay, then listen to this. He's becoming something of a neighborhood regular, hanging out by a gas station, dropping by a school bus lot, turning up on one street at dawn and another at dusk. Never mind that this is the city, and he or she is wildlife. A coyote who has apparently called Magnolia home for the past couple of months has human residents split into two camps. Now, I thought when I read that first paragraph, what are the two camps? The camps that love the coyote and the camp that wants to kill the coyote and get rid of it, right? That's not what's going on. Listen to this. Quote, about half the people think it's exciting and about half are getting bored of it because it's become so common. So the reason this made the best good news is we got this coyote that's been living on Magnolia for the last couple months and is in everybody's face, and it's obviously really well fed because it's the most beautiful coyote I've ever seen.
It's doing well.
Okay? and everybody's happy campers. Nobody's screaming and yelling and say, let's kill the coyote or get rid of all of that. To me, that's like a little miracle. So there is some good news around that nobody wants to kill the coyote. Woohoo! So anyway, pull up online to see the photograph, because
probably putting food out for it so it eats the food, doesn't eat the cats and dogs.
Well, you know, that's kind of one option. You know, you can put food out there. Of course, the wildlife people say, you know, they don't want you to do that because that encourages them to come around. But I haven't told this story for a long time, but you know, having grown up in Seattle, and my parents belonged to Sandpoint Country Club, you know, which is a golf club just in the Sandpoint area of Seattle. And there are coyotes that live, you know, on the golf course and sort of the wilder areas around here. And I have to say that my mother, in all the years that she was a golfer, she had a whole whole big pouch in her golf bag, and it was just all full of dog food. Because when she went out on the golf course, I mean, the coyotes recognized her, and they'd come out for her, and she would leave food for them every time she went golfing. So they at least got food, like every Tuesday, it was like Ladies' Day or something, so they at least got fed once a week by my mom. And, yeah, so my mom was part of the problem, but, you know, it's hard not to. Mm. And I mean, I have to say, for that reason, I'll say that, of course, you know, we do our Shelter Rescue Update Sunday every month, and we talk a lot to Sarvey Wildlife, you know, Care and Control, and we talk about, you know, what we should do with wildlife, and, of course, they're always telling us, don't feed the raccoons. And of course, Sandy was upset about that because she's got raccoons in the yard next to hers, and they're kind of wreaking havoc with her basset hounds and so forth. And so we've been diligently reporting on that. Well, I went to dinner at one of our wildlife experts' homes in December. And I walked in the kitchen, and everybody's so look out the sliding glass doors onto their back deck, and who's sitting at the door but a family of raccoons? And what's all over their place? And they're the cutest thing you can possibly see. And of course, there's food for them all over the place out there. And I'm saying, hey, wait a minute. Hello. So I was actually shocked. I said, you guys don't practice what you preach or what? You know, and the answer was, well, I've been feeding the raccoons a whole lot longer, and I've been volunteering at wildlife rescues, and it's not a problem in our neighborhood. And these raccoons were fat and happy. So then I guess in a certain regard, sometimes I guess if you feed them and you feed them enough, then they don't have to cause trouble every place else. But they do den up and live around the areas where there are food, and I think that's where the problem comes in.
Yeah.
Sandy, isn't that what's going on with you in your backyard? Because aren't there like raccoons denned up in the wood pile next door or something?
Yeah, there's tons of raccoons in my neighborhood, and they're very well fed. They're the most beautiful raccoons I've ever seen in my life. Fat.
Yeah,
yummy, beautiful raccoons, and somebody's feeding them.
But you still have problems. That they cause problems with your dogs, right?
Yeah, they're hounds, and so they smell the raccoons, and then, you know, at 10 o'clock at night, they're out there barking at the raccoons because that's when the raccoons are, you know, getting ready to prowl the neighborhood looking for their tasty treats.
Yeah,
they never get. I know that they're being fed because they never get in anybody's garbage.
So
that's why you know they're being fed.
So just FYI, even though, you know, it may not cause a specific problem where they're getting so much food they're not going to fight or harass, you know, people or animals about the food because they get so much, they still can cause a problem in the neighborhood, and it's not advisable to feed them. But I'll tell you that even the wildlife people sometimes feed them, even though they tell us not to. So it's kind of like, what part of do as I say, not as I do?
It's hard to resist.
Uh-huh. Okay, let's take care of our advertisers and sponsors for the last time in this hour. And then, folks, we're going to Africa. Helen and Bill Thayer here. Stay with us. Animal World continues right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Canada Pet Foods is committed to providing you and your pets the highest quality, all-natural, human-grade holistic products using the finest natural ingredients available, including vitamins and chelated minerals. Canada products are made the Canada way with superior quality in every bag and can. 100% satisfaction guaranteed and 100% nutritionally guaranteed. Check out the new All Life Stages grain-free formula, 80% meat protein, 20% vegetables and fruit, and 0 grains. Discover why dogs love Canada. Go to Canada.com for more information.
Called the Oprah of radio by her listeners. Award-winning host Dr. Pat Basile is blowing the doors off traditional talk radio. Get ready for powerful interviews with leaders in the field of human potential. Dr. Pat's perspective on living life full out has catapulted her show to the top of talk radio. Tune in, and Dr. Pat will help you thrive instead of merely survive. Listen to the Dr. Pat Show Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to noon on AM 1150, KKNW, and visit thedrpatshow.com.
Karma specialist and founder of Metaphysical Mothering, Robin Alexis, is nurturing, powerful, and phenomenally gifted. Her books and personal one-on-one phone sessions can change your life forever. And now she's channeled the Mary Magdalene Reiki Healing Energy Portal. And she's created the Robin Alexis Online Soul Spa. Come to her website, robinalexis.com, for details on how to get a free month subscription to her online soul spa. Robin invites you to share your comments and metaphysical experiences on her forum and blog, and she invites you to take advantage of the free month subscription to her online soul spa at robinalexis.com. Robin uses her ability as a medium, medical intuitive, and healer to assist you in removing blockages so you can experience life more fully. You can call her for a private session at 360-457-2993, or you can email her at robin@robinalexis.com.
Bringing you fresh perspectives every day. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Hey, I'm Martha Norwalk, and we're winding down the first hour of this week's edition of Animal World, but we're here until noon. In fact, we're here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. We have our favorite all-time guests in the studio today. Helen and Bill Thayer, adventure travelers, are here. And for any of you that don't know, I mean, Helen, gosh, you were at age 50 the first, and I think probably still the only one, ever walk solo to the North Pole.
Magnetic North Pole.
Magnetic North Pole without, what do you call it?
Without resupply.
Yeah, without resupply support. Or support of any kind. Mm-hmm. You and Charlie the wolf dog.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when you were 50.
Yes.
I can't imagine. And the book she wrote about that, folks, is on my all-time, well, all Ellen's books are on my all-time favorite books list. They will be on yours, and if you haven't read them, that book's called Polar Dream.
Yes, that's right.
Is that still available? All the books still available?
Yes.
Very. All right. So you wrote a whole book about that. It's absolutely one of the best reads I have ever experienced, and it's one of those books you can read over and over again, and you'd just be blown away. I mean, within the first few pages, it's like, oh my gosh, it's hard to imagine. And I still remember, because that's when I met you years ago in the Como Studios, when you came in to do Animal World after Polar Dream came out.
That's right, yes. We had Charlie then.
And yeah, Charlie the wolf dog was in the studio with us, and I remember the first thing I had to do the first time I met you, I had to grab your hands and look at your hands. I could not believe you still had any.
Yes, frostbite was pretty bad on that journey.
Can you imagine, folks, you're up at the North Pole, get right, walking. You start out to walk to the magnetic North Pole, you and the dog, and it, you know, they're the North Pole. I mean, there's nothing but ice and cold. How, and what are the temperatures up there?
We've experienced minus 75.
And you, like, was like your first night out or something, wasn't it?
Yes,
the first night you're out there, you kind of like mess up the detail a little bit.
That's right, yes. I made a mistake, and as a result, my fingers froze. So I had to complete the journey almost a month long with frostbite and fingers, but I made
it. Can you imagine? I mean, truly frostbite, right? Because mm-hmm. I remember you talking about the skin coming off.
Yes.
And can you imagine the first day out? She's 50 years old up there at the end of what? And all the skin comes off her fingers, got a frostbite. Does she turn around and come home? Oh, heck, I wouldn't have been in there in the first place. But that happened to me, boy, I'd be boot-footing and putting it back. But well, no, you went on that whole journey.
I figured that there was nothing I could do about it. Going back wouldn't help my fingers, so I might as well go on. So I put on a pair of liner gloves and just ignored them as much as I could.
All right, well, now that's the grit. Unbelievable. And then you have, then let's see, at 65 or 60, you celebrated your birthday by yourself with a frozen cupcake and a candle at the South Pole.
Yes, I did a 500-mile solo journey in the Antarctic to celebrate my 60th birthday.
Gosh. It's like, what's up? Unbelievable. Now, then, and you and Bill have done things like you've gone so all across the Sahara Desert.
Mm-hmm.
You've gone up and down the Amazon. Mm-hmm. You've had killer bees after you. You've had natives try to shoot and kill you. You've gone, you've trekked the Gobi Desert. And where was it that you were almost shot because you crossed a border when you weren't?
In the Gobi Desert.
The Gobi Desert.
We walked 1,600 miles across the entire length of the Gobi Desert. And at one point, we were over the border into China, and we were accused of being drug smugglers, which, of course, we weren't, but we had to get out of that little predicament.
Unbelievable. And of course, we learned about the camels on that trip, the wonderful, wonderful camels. And you two, I think, remain one of the very few humans on the planet to ever have actually had your eyes on a live Gobi bear.
That's right. Because we walk everywhere, we tend to see animals that other people don't see very much because as we walk, we're silent, and so we're able to approach these animals, or they will happen upon them without them having seen us first and run away. So we're really lucky to see that Gobi bear. That was pretty special.
Yeah. Like how many?
They think there might be 35 left in the world.
Yeah, 35 left in the world. Helen and Bill saw one of them. Wow. Unbelievable. So, and then, your third book is Walking the Gobi.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Now, the second book in there is Three Among the Wolves, mm-hmm. because after all, you know, after you got Charlie the wolf dog, you know, for your trek to the North Pole, and of course, you know, once you bought him, to go with, he was yours.
Oh, yes.
And so he didn't stay behind. So Charlie, how many years did Charlie live?
23
years. Because that Inuit wolf dog, what incredible genetics.
Well, wonderful genetics. And then when I brought him home, he had monthly acupuncture, monthly chiropractic, and cooked all of his food. And he was treated like an athlete. He hiked hundreds of miles with us in the
No, I take some credit for that, because you learned about the vets and the chiropractic and acupuncture on Animal World when you came to do the show. And you hugged. So Charlie got acupuncture and chiropractic after that for the rest of his life.
Yes, that's right.
Lived to 23.
Yes, and he was never sick. He was always a very strong, healthy fellow.
So then at some point, you and Bill went back up to Northern Canada?
Just above the Arctic Circle in the Canadian Yukon.
Canadian Yukon, that's what I was looking for. And you lived among the wolves.
For a year.
Mm-hmm.
Three different packs for 1 year.
So that's the second book is Three Among the Wolves. Mm-hmm. Oh, what a story. And I remember telling y'all that when I completed, by the time I was done reading that book, when I read the last page, I was crying like a baby. And part of it was because, you know, they were leaving the wolves, and that really touched my heart. But the other reason I was crying is because I was so upset the book was over. I just wanted it to continue. And so that's how great Helen's books are. Now, you can find out more about Helen and Bill's treks by going to their website, which is www.helenthayer.com. That's
yes.
Thayer. So you can get on your computers right now and check out some of this stuff. Now, can the three books be ordered through your website?
Yes, I can. Yes, and
I think you can even get autographed copies.
Yes, I'd send an autographed copy.
Yeah.
People just need to tell me how they want them autographed, and I can and they can go on my website and purchase them from there, and I'll send an autographed copy to them.
Wow. So check it out. I mean, it's unbelievable. And then you get into Helen's background, you're an Olympic champion, and what did you do?
I was the United States National Luge Champion, and I represented three countries in track and field. New Zealand, the country of my birth, then Guatemala, where Bill was a helicopter pilot, and then United States.
Yeah, and they're a great love story because Bill robbed the cradle on the farm. He was hired as a crop duster.
He was in agriculture work, and my dad, we had 10,000 acres, and my dad needed a pilot and pilot and helicopter to do some work. So Bill was the one sent over, and so it was love at first sight. We became very, very good friends immediately.
I picked up the farmer's daughter.
Yeah, Bill just chimed in if you missed that. He said, I picked up the farmer's daughter. And that's true. Now, this was where was this?
This was in New Zealand.
Because that's where you were born and grew up.
Yes, that's right. And Bill was transferred there from the U.S. He's born American. He was transferred just 3 weeks before. So
how old were you at the time?
I was married at 23. I was 21 when we met.
Okay. And Bill was how much older than you?
11 years.
11 years older. So he did.
1 month and 4 days.
He did run off with the farmer's daughter.
He did.
But you knew right away. It was an instant.
Yes, it was. It was instant, absolute friendship. We